Blog Talk Radio.
I'd like to thank you for tuning in to the World Boxing Review Radio Show. Hi, my name is Aaron Snowell, and they call me the Trainer of Champions. And also live from Pottsville, Pennsylvania, in the mountains, our radio aficionado, Bob Murray. What's going on, Bob?
Hey, good morning, Aaron. Hey, yeah, man, we got a little bit more rain again, as usual. Sun up is nothing new here.
Well, I had a touch of the flu, man, and I wasn't feeling well. But besides all of that, Bob, I'm just happy to be talking because the other day my voice wasn't sounding too good.
That's a change of season, you know. The change of season gets you. You get hot, cold, wet, dry, all that.
Yeah, my daughter Tahita, she was sick, and I was teasing her about the flu, right? and here all of a sudden she gets better, now I got it.
Yeah, see, right.
so I have it. So with all of that, I'm feeling better, Bob, and it won't be long. We'll be going down to New Jersey on November 8th
right,
in Garfield at the Venetian, where I get inducted. So fans, there's still tickets on sale. We'd like you to come out and support us over there. And you can call the New Jersey Boxing Hall of Fame. The number is online. So it's at the Garfield, it's the Venetian in Garfield, New Jersey. So you can look the telephone number up to the New Jersey Boxing Hall of Fame. It's all online.
All right, definitely, yeah. That's going to be great. Looking forward to it, yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bob, without further ado, man, what's going on around the world in boxing? I know there's a lot of news, there's a lot of dates, there's a lot of fights. What do we got?
Right, yeah. Well, we got before we get into the big ones tonight, this, we do have some news to talk about at the end of this. Indeed, yeah, pretty busy week. But the two big venues happening in the U.S. tonight, and we'll start out in Las Vegas, Nevada, at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino, where Angel Acosta, he's 18-1, all 18 wins by knockout, defending his WBO World Light Flyweight title against Abraham Rodriguez, 23-1, 11 knockouts. Also featured on the undercard will be the battle for the WBC US NBC Super Welterweight crown between Bakram Murtazaliyev, who's 13-0, 11 KOs, and Norberto Gonzalez, 23-11, 13 knockouts. Also, Mayrim Nursultanov, 8-0, 7 KOs, fights Jamar Freeman, 15-6-2, for the NABF Junior Middleweight title. And Rashidi Ellis, 20-0, fights for the IBF North American Welterweight title. And the other big night is going on in Omaha, Nebraska, where we have Terrence Crawford, 33-0, 24 knockouts, defending his WBO World Welterweight belt against the undefeated challenger Jose Benavidez Jr., 27-0, 18 knockouts. And Aaron, we just got to point out right now, Benavidez, you know, shot in the right leg back in 2016 there in Phoenix, left for dead basically on the side of the road, and people were wondering if he was even going to walk again, let alone get back into the ring. So, you know, it's a big fight, but it's one of those weird fights. You know, Crawford always gets blamed for never fighting anybody. He fights Jeff Horn, they say, so what, you know? And now if he beats Benavidez, they'll say, oh, he's got one leg. But I think it's great that the man's getting back into the ring no matter what happens.
Well,
he's a great fighter. They didn't think he was even going to walk again, you know?
It's tough to come back from that, to climb in the ring, just to rehab yourself from that and get in the ring and spar all the time and stuff and get ready for it. He's tough. This is a tough fight for Crawford. You know, Crawford
Absolutely.
Can outright
yes,
fight. And when you have a name, you can't take nobody lightly. This is a tough fight for him, and you're going to see great action in this fight because Crawford always brings the action.
Yes, that's a great fight. And on that undercard, we have Shakur Stevenson, 8-0, and Vidrell Simeon, 21-2, vying for the vacant WBC Continental America Featherweight crown. And both Carlos Adams, 14-0, and Joshua Conley, 14-2-1, seek the vacant NABF Super Welterweight belt. In Salinas, California, I'm beating Ruben Vila, 13-0, battles Miguel Colizoza, 10-3 in the Super Featherweight feature. And we have female flyweight Miranda Atkins topping the card in Topeka, Kansas, while light heavyweight Derek Finley, he headlines in Gary, Indiana. And the old veteran heavyweight Chauncey Welliver, 56 wins, 12 losses, 5 draws, steps in with the 7-0 Eric Hempstead in the feature in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. And, boy, that's another good fight, too. Looking forward to seeing the old man Chauncey Welliver getting back out there. Up in Montreal, Canada, we have a hometown hero going at it, Matthew Germain, 15-0, defending his IBF North American super lightweight title against the 14-8-1 Carlos Jimenez, while Eric Bazinian, 20-0, 15 by knockouts, defends his WBO and ABO super middleweight belt against the 17-2 Francine Tattoo. Here's a good one in the Federal District of Mexico City, Mexico. One of these kids we're keeping an eye on. He's 20 years old. His name's Eduardo Hernandez. 20 years old. He's 26-0 with 23 knockouts. He's up and coming. He's defending his WBC Youth World Super Featherweight title against challenger Luis Diaz Pastrana. He's 23-3-1, 14 knockouts. And in Manalan in Veracruz, it's Luis Badola Orozco versus Roberto Rodriguez. He's 12-3 for the vacant WBC for combat bantamweight title. Over now to Ekaterinburg, Russia, where we have Zolani Tet, 27-3, 21 knockouts. He defends his WBO World Bantamweight belt against Cal Aloya, who's 4-0. Other big fights on that card include Vladimir Shishkin, 7-0, versus Najim Mohammadi, who's 40-6. For the WBA Continental Super Middleweight Crown. Before Paparvia, 5-1, and Jake Bornea, 14-2, vie for the vacant IBF Asia Bantamweight title. Two undefeated cruiserweights go at it with the 16-0, 13 by knockout Andrew Kabidi stepping in against Ruslan Feifus, 23-0, with 16 knockouts. And two 15-0 super welterweights meet up when Magomed Kurbanov battles Juan Rodriguez. Over now to Newcastle in the UK, where Glenn Foote, 23-3, and Robbie Davis Jr., 16-1, seek the vacant Triple BFC British Super Lightweight and Commonwealth British Empire Super Lightweight belts. 17-0, Louis Ritzau takes on the 19-3 Francesco Patera for the vacant EBU European Lightweight crown. And Joshua Boazzi, 7-0, battles Tony Avalon, 26-10-2, for the UBA International Light Heavyweight title. And as always, York Hall in London has a big, busy night with Chantel Cameron, 7-0, 5 knockouts, going at it with Diana Santana, who's 36-9, 15 knockouts for the IBO World Female Lightweight title. Also, Lee McGregor versus Thomas Escamba vying for the vacant Commonwealth British Empire Bantamweight belt. And heavyweights Martin Bacoli Ilunga, 11-0, and Michael Hunter, 14-1, seek the vacant IBO Intercontinental Heavyweight title. Over in Tottenham, Jermaine Pinedo, 6-2, takes on Austin Jeffrey, 7-0 for the Triple BFC Southern Area Lightweight title. Paisley, Scotland, will see Craig McIntyre, 9-0-1, versus Marek Leskowski, 9-9-2, for the vacant BBFC Scottish Area Super Middleweight crown. In their France, it's Hélène Lascombe versus Elise Boussier in the female featherweight feature. Rome, Italy, will headline with the Fabio Mastromarino, 5-0 versus Sayyad Mustafa, 6-0-1 middleweight matchup. While down in Lombardia, it's Nicholas Esquivito versus Delko Kovacevic, who's 10-8-1 in a welterweight headliner. In Bologna, it's Arvind Kaba, 7-0, stepping in with fellow welterweight David Afonso Pereira as the main event there. Also, there's a welterweight clash of Hamza Massawi, 9-1 versus Leonel Rodrigo at the top of the bill in Valenciana, Spain. And super lightweight Arbor Ibisi and Abdellah Lahou tangle at the top of the card in Martigny, Switzerland. These Belgium headlines with the Farouk Kobanov, 15-1 versus Sylvain Chappelle, 17-25-2, super featherweight contest. It's Marcos Nader, 19-11-1 versus Dejan Michelovic, who's 14-3-1 for the Austrian middleweight title. And that's the main event in Vienna, Austria. Volkhagen, Hessen, Germany. We'll see 15-0 Mario Jasmin take off Paata Verduschavili, 34-16-2, for the German International BBB welterweight belts. Nordrhein-Westfalen features the super welterweight battle between Yasu Yuksu, 5-1, and Giora Rosa, 6-6. While Sachsen will see cruiserweight Etem Bayramoglu take off Hamadi Ayub. Katarska Hungary hosts the battle for the vacant UBO Youth Super Lightweight title between Zoltan Sermon Jr., 8-1, and Dominic Korva, 4-0, as well as the fight for the vacant UBO Youth Welterweight title between Krzysztof Kovacs, 5-1-1, and Slobodan Kubica, 2-3. Down in Africa, in Accra, Ghana, it's 22-0-1 with 19 knockouts. Isaac Saki defending his WBO Africa Super Bantamweight battle against the 9-0 Wasiru Muhammad. An action in South America tonight is highlighted by Jessica Yolanda Bopp, 34-1, 15 knockouts. We call her the Little Bopper. She defended her WBA World Female Light Flyweight title against the 21-2 Sandra Robles in the main event in Buenos Aires, Argentina. Also, Gustavo Daniel Lemos, 18-0, fight Uriel Perez, 17-3, for the IBF Latino Lightweight Crown in Santa Clara. And it's Nazareno Gaston Ruiz, 30-17, crossing the ropes to go at it with Jonathan Joel Kasafu in the welterweight feature. Well, super featherweight Sergio Carlos Santillan, 31-14-3, and Gennaro Maximo Gonzalo DeMarco, 12-16-3, tops the card in Corrientes. Iquique Chile hosts the featherweight clash of Jose Argel, 4-6, versus Carlos Jose Rodriguez Ramos, who's 2-1. We go down under now to Brisbane, Australia. Liam Paro, 14-0, fights Robert Slotwick, 22-1, in a 10-round super lightweight headliner on a card that also features Adrian Rodriguez, 11-1-1, taking on Billy Liebmo for the Australia Queensland State Super Welterweight Crown. Other local titles on the line in that fight, in that card as well, include 7-0 Tyson Belt battling Gabriel Coffey, 1-1-1 for the vacant Australia Queensland Welterweight Crown. 6-0 Julian Frost battles the 2-2 Wade Gold for the Australian Queensland vacant super lightweight title. And Jacob Eng, 7-0, fights Mark Ramirez, 3-1-2 for the vacant Australia Queensland State lightweight title. Forster in New South Wales will host the Joshua English versus Bruno Vifuavuili bantamweight battle. And Auckland, New Zealand will see Sarah Long clash with Ashley Campbell for the vacant New Zealand Professional Boxing Association female heavyweight title. Busan, South Korea features a super featherweight fight between Suk Jun Hwang, 3-1-2, and Irma Amakunov, who's 2-0. And I just want to also mention a big fight on Sunday back in Bayern, Germany. Emma Kozan, she's 14-0-1, seeks to vacant IBA and WBF World Female Super Middleweight belts against the 2-1-2 Iris Hernandez. There we go, around the world, 19 countries today. Lots of action, some good fights all throughout the world. And we'll have some comments coming up. Okay.
How many countries, Bob?
There we go. But anyway,
it was 19?
Go ahead. 19 countries,
Yeah, 19 countries. You know, we have our guests holding in on the queue. Without further ado, we'd like to thank you for tuning into the World Boxing Review radio show. My name is Aaron Snowell. They call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions. And our radio aficionado, Bob Murray. Our special guest today is Robert Mosley Jacobs, man. What's going on, champ?
Hey, what's going on, brother? How you doing, man?
Well, bro, I want to tell you, man, you're the hardest man working in the boxing business, man. Anytime you put that effort into them kids that you got in that program in Akron, Ohio, man, you're doing something kind of special, man.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that, man.
Yeah, I can remember back in the day, man, when... Yeah, I can hear you fine, you know, just...
Yeah, you're coming good. Yeah, everything's good.
Yeah, everything's good. You just got to call... Just talk up to the phone just a little closer, but we can hear you.
Okay.
Awesome. I can remember back in the days in Orwell, Ohio at King's Training Camp when you were an inspiring young man. I used to come up to the King's Training Camp all the time with your father, who I love dearly, man. He used to bring fighters up there, the spar guys. He had that heavyweight Cornelius out of Akron. And you were right there practicing your train as a little kid, and the apple don't fall far from the tree. Good bread comes from good dough. And I know your father's smiling at you now from the heavens, man, the work that you're doing with these children. Tell us a little bit about your program.
Yes, man, I appreciate that. Yeah, man. I remember being up there with y'all, man, 18 years old at Don King's camp, man. It was an awesome experience to be around all them pros and you great coaches and just soaking up all the game, man. It really helped a lot. But, yeah, we got a program going here in Akron. I took from what I seen up there when I was younger and what my dad did and been just trying to help the youth out here with boxing. And we started off at five years old and up. And right now we just got a new facility in Akron, Ohio. We're gonna be doing MMA, wrestling, and boxing at the same time, so the kids can get a little feel of each sport. And we're just driving as best we can to get these kids off the streets.
So you got MMA and wrestling and boxing. So you have all the rings. I had seen some pictures you had sent me about the inside of the gym. I seen that you had an octagon ring, you had a regular boxing ring, and mats and things like that. Yeah, and you do after school programs too.
Yes, you do after school programs? Yes, we do after school programs with kids that are struggling with their homework. So we have somebody come in and tutor them and help them with their homework. Eventually, right now we just opened up this building, so we ain't got it going on as of yet. But as far as in the future, as soon as we get open, that'll be going taking place.
Yeah, well, you know, to give our fans from around the world just a little bit of history about yourself, you're a national amateur champion. Can you explain to the viewing audience all awards you won as an amateur? I mean, you won a lot of them.
Yes. Well, actually, after my dad passed when I was 14, I started really getting serious about the sport and getting in shape and really checking my talent. So in 1995, I won the Junior Olympic Nationals, then came back and won the international tournament and beat Canada. Then right behind that, 96, I won the Silver Glove Nationals. Then I took off a couple years. I started getting older and had to get a job and working, so started working. Then I came back, and I won the Golden Gloves in 2001. Then I came back and won the Eastern Trials in 2004 to go to the Olympic Trials, and I lost in the finals of the Olympic Trials. And I got inducted in the Hall of Fame in 2012, Summit County Hall of Fame Boxing, 2012.
Mm-hmm. Now, you and Floyd Mayweather were pretty close back then when you were fighting, right?
Yes. He was a little older than me, but, yeah, we used to go to a lot of tournaments together, see him at a lot of tournaments, man. He was something to watch, man. You wanted to see him fight when you was around him. That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, hey, look, what are the things, I know when you're in a program like that helping kids, you're always in need of things. What are some of the things that people can help you get and do? Just name some of those things and where they can contact you to get you those things and stuff like that, you know, because you're doing such a great job.
Yes, thank you, sir. Anything is a blessing. Like we say, we run this program free for the kids. We just ask for donations. And we just hand wraps, boxing gloves, anything would be a blessing. Small donations, you can cash app us at 330-BOXING if you want to plant a seed. And we're just striving to keep these kids off the streets and show them a better way, show them how to work hard for what they get.
Well, we know that it's a lot of work when you're working with kids. Hey, look, what'd you say that was 330, was it, or 360? What is the address again?
It's Cash App. My Cash App is 330-BOXING, and my Facebook, if you want to get in contact with me that way, is Robert Moses Jacobs on Facebook. And on Instagram is Moses116 on Instagram.
Mm-hmm. Now, to take those kids to amateur tournaments and stuff like that. You have to raise money. You have to find a sponsor. You know, we're just asking our people out there that's listening is that, you know, he runs a good program. He has a lot. What is it? You have over 60-some kids, 70-some kids in your program, right? I know there's a lot
sir,
of
them. Yes, sir.
Yeah, you know,
man,
you
it's
do,
deep, man. Yeah, it's deep. We
ahead,
keep
Moses.
It deep in there, even though. Say that again, sir.
Yeah, go on. Tell how many people you have.
Yes, we currently got about 65, 70 kids in our program right now. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, yes, we currently have about 65, 70 kids in our program right now, and currently have about 40 or 50 on the waiting list right now.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, we're just trying to
Give
them opportunities to go see the world, go to different states, boxes, seeing what's going on in the tournaments, and showing how these kids are really living in different states and different cities and trying to box their way out of poverty, you know? Because I know how it is to walk around when there's no hope, and we just try to give them hope. You know, I'm trying to be what I needed, you know?
Yeah, well, you're giving them great hope. Well, we do know that. And that's a great thing that you're doing.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate it. Yes,
all right.
Yes.
In
I appreciate
closing,
you too. Hey, Aaron.
Yeah. Yes.
Hey, now, can I ask you a question?
Yeah, of course.
So, how was the experience, man? I've seen all the pictures and stuff, and I've been around you coaching. You're a great coach. How was the experience working with Mike Tyson?
Well, Mike Tyson is something special. Athletes like Mike Tyson are not around all the time. You've been around the best of them that ever done it, you know, Mike Tyson and a host of others, he just falls in line with the great people that you're around. You know, when you have a job to do, you're into doing the job and try to do it the best that you can and to create a winning atmosphere. You know, when you come there, you know, all of that stuff in the training camp, as you well know, it's an atmosphere to produce winning. The meals that are served, you've seen the kitchen, you've been in the kitchen, you ate in the kitchen, the food that's served, all that's to help the fighter be prepared so he can go in the ring less stress-free and give it all that he has. And once that happens, you know, he can just put, you know, winning and training on his mind. And Mike Tyson was the same type of person. When he was mentally into doing what he was doing, you couldn't find a better athlete or fighter. When his mind was into it, he would give you 100% and he would do everything that you asked him to do. So that's the way
that's
it is. Yeah, you don't reach a level of that part of being undisputed heavyweight champion not putting great work in. You know, people may say a whole lot of things. Mike Tyson put a lot of great time in the gym. He put a lot of great effort, a lot of great work. And, you know, that's to that. That's the way I feel about that. When he bring his best, he did his best.
Right. I just wanted to commend you, man, because I was watching you, man. I admired it. Yep,
I thank you. I thank you.
I appreciate you. You're awesome, brother, for thinking about me.
Yeah, but, well, it's all about what you're doing. You're doing great things when it comes to children. Boxing has no future without the young. And when you have a young man like yourself who has been to the high levels of amateur boxing and in boxing and to take and put in time with the young kids, see, because they're searching and wondering, and when someone plants a good seed like yourself in it just spreads like wildfire. You know, you may not get, you know, guys champion just in boxing, but you get champions for life, as we call it, businessmen, doctors, lawyers. So you're doing something great, and we want to commend you on that effort and helping kids with schoolwork and all of that. That's a good thing. You know?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I say education is the key. You know, education is the key. I really didn't go far in my education. And I understand that was the most thing that needed to be done is education. Even though I was boxing, I still should have been on trips doing homework and, you know, keeping that first too also. So I understand these kids need to have at least a B or a C average to even come in the program. And if they don't, we'll help them out to get their homework up and get their studies up so they can participate in the boxing program. Education is first in the program.
Yeah, that's a good thing. But look, in closing, do you have any questions, Bob?
Do you have anybody that you're looking good right now in some of your programs? Any good fighters? Tell us a little bit about some of the kids you got.
Oh yeah, we got some awesome young men right now. The kids right now are they're just in beginner stage right now. The new kids I got right now. So they're not going to be fighting for the next 6, 7 months. But I just got them sparring right now. But I also got some young men between the ages of 18 and 21 that was doing MMA over there. But they started to convert it to boxing now. And they're looking real awesome, man. About 10 of them looking real good, man. And I'm going to have them in a couple of amateur fights coming up this month, actually, on the 26th. They're going to have an amateur bout in Springfield, Ohio. And we're going to put them on there, man, with some guys that's been boxing in the novice division and see
how it's
up.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, great. Good, yeah.
Well, look, Brother Moses, we're just happy that you gave us the opportunity to come on our show. And We'll have you back on.
Aaron.
Yes.
Aaron.
This is Henry Haskell. Yes, Henry.
Yeah, Moses, I like to commend you. I used to be in charge of the amateur boxing in New Jersey for about 6 years, so I know what you're going through. Now, is that rule still in? If you're an MMA fighter, you have to go in the open class? You can't box?
No, I don't think. That's only for, like, when you first start MMA, it's like amateur also. So a lot of them guys are boxing amateur MMA. So,
well, the thing was, it was several years ago that we had a couple of MMA guys fighting our tournament. And one guy, he didn't know what he was doing. He didn't even have to hold his hands up. And the other guy, he was a real terror. So I said, you know, what can you do about this? And I recommended a couple of things, but they went overboard. And I know the last thing I heard was if you have one MMA bout, and this is ridiculous, you have to box in the open class. This was like 2 years ago when I was still a president, and I fought against it. I said, you know, it should be, if anything, it should be maybe one MMA fight should translate to one amateur fight, you know. But you should look into that before you...
Right, you're not, then you're a C or not. Yes, you're right.
Yeah, you should look into that because, you know, I mean, one-night shows is not bad because, you know, you can probably, you know, talk to the trainer and everything like this and blah, 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 and, you know, make the match. But in tournaments, you know, they're going to say, hey, this guy fought MMA. He fought one bout when he was 10 years old. Now he's 16. He's still got to go in the open class, which I thought was ridiculous.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, because you'd be fighting a guy that got over 100 fights, national champion. Usually they got no experience.
Yeah, I mean, I brought it up, you know, years ago, and then I was sorry I did because they just went overboard. I mean, you know, I said, geez, you know. In the beginning, I wanted to have two MMA fights equal one amateur fight because a lot of the times when you're MMA, you don't even use your fists. You know, the two guys fighting that have nothing but ground game. And, you know, these guys don't know what they're doing. I mean, you know, but you know, I would look into that before you put him into something. That's all.
Right.
And
I
want to commend
that,
you.
Brother.
Like I said, I want to commend you because, you know, like I said, I was involved, and I'm still involved. I'm the president of the Diamond Gloves in New Jersey and also ring announced for the Golden Gloves. And, you know, for the last 30-some years I've been with the Diamond Gloves and Golden Gloves. And, you know, I know what the trainers go through. I go to the gyms and everything like this, and, you know, they dedicate their time. They, you know, they put that key in the door, open it up to these kids that don't have a father figure. And the way I listened to you, which really impressed me, was getting these kids to have good marks. You know, because, you know, a lot of people say, hey, I'm going to be the next Joe Louis or Muhammad Ali or Mike Tyson. But how many people are actually going to get that far? One in a million.
Right.
So I commend you for them things, because I tell each and every coach I see, you're not only a coach inside the ring, but you're a coach outside the ring. You know, whatever you do, they're going to follow. If you act like a jerk, guess what? They're going to act like a jerk. And then when they get bigger, they might have a team, and they're going to be training some kids, and they're going to act the same way. The way I see it with you,
right,
these kids are going to grow up, and if they do become a coach in maybe baseball, football, or boxing, they're gonna put your teaching into the next generation. So you're doing an outstanding job. I just want to commend you.
Oh, thank you, brother. I appreciate that. Yes, man, the whole thing is to build their confidence up and, you know, get them off the streets and keep them from killing each other out here and, you know, try to show them a better way. Because I know, even though you said that too also, but it's seeming to be plentiful a little bit now with these kids coming around and just getting into sport and never boxing and only boxing 5 years, like, Errol Spence. You know, just starting to box about 15 years old, and Crawford quitting and coming back. Now he's a world champion. Anthony Joshua only boxing for that short time, and
we had Shakur Stevenson. We had in New Jersey. You know, I knew him since he was like 6 years old.
Coach Moses, right? His coach's name is Moses.
Yeah, in fact, he called me up yesterday. He wanted to know when the first million-dollar gate was. And he had a fight tonight.
He's an awesome guy. I never met him, but he seems like an awesome guy.
Yeah, he is. A very good coach, too. And, you know, I'm pretty close with them. And, like I said, you're doing a great job, and just keep it up.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate you. What's your name again, sir, so I can remember you when I look you up?
Yeah, Henry Hascup, Hascup. You can Google me. Don't believe everything you read, but, you know, it's all right.
And Henry's one of the major boxing historians, so he knows who you are, Moses, and he knows your amateur credentials and stuff. Henry's one of the most noted boxing historians in boxing. Him and our other historian, Tony Trim.
I'm the president of the New Jersey Boxing Hall of Fame, and we're inducting some guy by the name of Aaron Snowell on November 8th. So I don't know if you ever heard that name.
Congratulations, man.
Thank you.
Yes, that's awesome.
All righty.
Congratulations.
We want to tell you is to keep up your good work, and may the Lord bless you in all your efforts that you're trying with these youth. And when the down times come, we just ask the Lord to bless you to stay strong. That's what we ask of you, and keep up the good work, man. And thank you for coming on the World Boxing Review Radio Show with myself, the radio aficionado Bob Murray, and our boxing historian Tony Trim. Thank you, Moses. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Appreciate you guys. Have a blessed weekend.
You too.
Okay. Take care.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. So hey Henry, this is Bob here. Hey, there's a Shakur Stevenson fighting tonight in Omaha with that Terrence Crawford. Is he related to the one you're speaking of?
He was talking about
Terrence Crawford, who's fighting tonight.
His trainer
is on that card. Yeah,
Yeah, his trainer, who happens to be his grandfather, he called me up yesterday. He said, Henry, I got a question.
Okay, the
grandfather,
I
get this all
yeah.
the time. You know, who was the first million-dollar gate? Here, yeah. talk to this guy. You know, and it was Carpentier-Dempsey fight, of course, and, you know, I told him all about it. And he says, yeah, we got a fight tomorrow night. I said, okay, good luck. You know, so fighting a pretty good guy.
Yeah, good. Yeah, yeah, we have that. Vidrell Simeon, he's 21-2. Hey, you know, I just want
yeah.
to get one more point in, too, that we didn't get to before. This is just a general news story for Aaron as well. You know, last week on the show, we were talking about Wisako Wanget, the Thailand fighter, also known as Chisaket Surungvisai. But you know
oh,
that
boy.
Fight last week, he drew 25 million viewers. A 58.5 rating. 25 million viewers saw that Rungvisai fight last week. Those are amazing numbers coming out of Thailand. I just had to point
oh,
that out.
Oh, it's amazing that you can pronounce the guy's name.
The Rung, yeah. Yeah. Well, that's what we were talking about last week, the guy's name. I said, when he stepped in the ring, you know who he is. Wisako Wanget, yeah, but they also call him Chisaket Surungvisai. He's the Thai champion. But Aaron, yes. 25 million viewers on the cable channel, the sports channel there in Thailand, a 58.5 rating. You talk about numbers. That's something that caught my eye for sure.
Oh, that catches anybody's eye. Those numbers are phenomenal.
Yeah. Phenomenal.
Say that.
Yeah. So you yeah, how the life of boxing in the Southeast Asia area is really happening too.
Oh, yeah. That's what everyone always talked about, you know, with this thing pay-per-view, like China and Asia, if it ever catches on real good, well, boxing and stuff has always been, but the pay-per-view thing, it would go off the chain because of the amount of people.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But look, without further ado, thank you for the great information. We have our great historian bring us the legend tales of the boxing history of Ezek Charles, heavyweight champion. Come on with it, Henry.
Yeah,
what do we got?
All right, Ezek Charles. He's probably one of the, let's say, underrated fighters that, you know, really boxing ever had. And, you know, when you're talking about the greatest fighters, his name very seldom comes up unless you're a true boxing historian. You know, he was born in Georgia in 1921, and then he moved to Cincinnati at the age of 9 to live with his grandmother and great-grandmother. And he took up boxing, you know, at when he was a teenager in Cincinnati, and he became, you know, a champion in both Diamond Gloves and AAU championships and national titles. The thing is that if you look up his bio, even on BoxRec and other sources, they'll tell you that he was like 42-0 as an amateur. Well, you know, I hate myself for this, but, you know, I always do my research and everything like this, and I know he lost at least 5 amateur bouts from 1936 to 38, and he also fought a draw against another guy. But he did have a pretty good amateur career. He was a national champion, like I said, and, you know, in 1940, he was he turned pro. I think he would have... He would have stuck around the amateurs if they had the Olympics in 1940, but in 40 and 44, they didn't have an Olympics because of World War II. But he started his professional career in March of 1940, and he won his first 17 fights in a row. And still as a teenager, in his 18th fight, he went against Ken Overland. Now, Ken Overland was the former middleweight champion of the world, who just lost his title in a highly disputed decision against Billy Souse. And, you know, most people still rated him as the top middleweight in the entire world. And like I said, Charles was still 19 years old. And, of course, Overland was just a little too much for him, and he suffered his first defeat. And then he went on to beat 2 other middleweight champions, and then he fought Overland again, and fought him to a majority draw. And he was, like I said, that was in March of 1942. And Charles just turned, well, he was like 20 years old at that time. And a lot of people thought he actually won that fight. And then he had one hiccup before he was a substitute for Ken Overland against one of the toughest welterweights and middleweights of our generation, Charlie Burley. Charlie Burley was you know, quite possibly maybe one or two of the best fighters of all time that never won a world title. And lo and behold, Ezra Charles beat him, not once, but he beat him twice in 5 weeks. Is that the phone ringing?
Yep. That's for you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 But anyway, after that, you know, he actually became a world contender in 1942 in the middleweight class. And then after he beat Charlie Burley and everything, his rating went way up. And then he had two wins over Joey Maxim, who would later become the light heavyweight champion of the world. And then he had two hiccups when he lost to Jimmy Bevins and Lloyd Marshall. And then he went to the service. And when he lost to Lloyd Marshall, he still was only like 21 years old. So he was still a kid. He was still a kid. So, you know, when he got out of the service, he was 24 years old. Now he was a full-grown man. And in his next 40 fights, he won 39 of them. He was 39-1. I mean, he went on to beat Archie Moore. Then he revenged the loss against Lloyd Marshall when he knocked him out in the sixth round. Then he beat Jimmy Bevins not once but twice, knocking him out the second time. Then he won a majority decision over Archie Moore again. Then he had that one little hiccup against Elmer Ray, and most people thought he won, but most people, except for the judges gave it to Ray. And then he beat Lloyd Marshall again, and knocked him out in the second round. And then he went on to beat Archie Moore. And now, right now, he was like one of the top, if not the top, light heavyweight in the world. He knocked Archie Moore out in eight rounds. Then he fought a guy by the name of Sam Barone. Barone was a tough light heavyweight. He was never knocked out in his life. But sometimes, you know, fighters have too much heart for their own good. And Barone stayed in there until the 10th round when Charles knocked him out and Barone went down and he never got back up. He died the next day. Kind of put a halt to Charles's career. You know, one idiot boxing writer asked, you know, how does it feel to kill a guy? And, you know, that was uncalled for. But another one said, are you going to fight again? And Charles said, no, he's not. He's going to, you know, give it up because he felt that bad. But when he went to the funeral for Sam's father talked him out of it. He said, why don't you just fight for my son and win a world title? So the next fight he did was against Elmer Ray, the only guy that beat him in the last 40 fights. And it was going to be a benefit for Sam. And he stopped Elmer Ray in the ninth round. So he was back on track again, you know, but he didn't have that, you know, he was known as the Cincinnati Cobra. He didn't have that Cobra instinct again. He didn't go for the kill all the time. But after that, he did pick up wins over Jimmy Bivens again and Joey Maxim. And then he wanted to fight Joe Louis. Yeah, this is like 1948, 1949. And he was working his way up both in light heavyweight division. And he thought, you know, he can get a shot at the light heavyweight title against Gus Lestovich or maybe even Joe Louis for the heavyweight title. Gus Lestovich didn't want nothing to do with him, you know. He moved up in class and he tried to challenge Joe Louis, but Joe Louis retired, and so the top two contenders at that time was Jersey Joe Walcott and Ezra Charles. So they went against each other, and lo and behold, in Kaminsky Park in Chicago. On June 22nd, 1949, Ezra Charles beat Jersey Joe Walcott in 15 rounds to become the heavyweight champion of the world. His first defense, he went against Gus Lestovich, the guy that wouldn't give him a fight for the light heavyweight title, but here is Charles. he gave Lesovich a shot at the heavyweight title. And it was just a one-sided fight, as Lesovich wasn't even in the same class as Charles. Then he unified the title by beating comebacking Joe Lewis in 15 rounds. He won, you know, almost every round. One judge gave him 12, another gave him 13, another judge gave him 10 rounds, you know. And then a few more bouts, he defended against Jersey Joe Walcott, then Joey Maxim. And then he gave Walcott another shot at the title. This is going to be Walcott's fifth shot at the heavyweight championship of the world. And this time, I guess, five is a charm, because Jersey Joe Walcott landed one of the greatest left hooks in boxing history, and Charles went down flat in his face, and Charles was no longer the heavyweight champion. You know, he tried to, you know, get his title back. He did beat Joey Maxim again. He went on to fight Jersey Joe Walcott once again, and he lost a very close 15-round decision. After that, he did have another win against Jimmy Vivens, but then he lost to Nino Valdez and Harold Johnson. But then he had two back-to-back wins against Coley Wallace and Bob Satterfield. Coley Wallace is one of only four people to beat Marciano in the amateurs, and Bob Satterfield. And, of course, Coley Wallace played Joe Lewis in the Joe Lewis pitcher. And Bob Satterfield was one of the greatest knockout artists. And, Charles knocked them both out. Then he fought Rocky Marciano, the heavyweight champion of the world, who also beat Walcott for the title. And Marciano was 45-0. The first bout went the distance. Marciano won the close but decisive decision over Charles at Yankee Stadium. But, most people thought maybe Charles deserved another shot. So I gave him another shot in September of 1954, just 3 months later. And Marciano was actually dominating the fight until the sixth round, when Ezra Charles split his nose right open, right up, and the doctors wanted to stop the fight, and it was just terrible. Going into the eighth round, they thought Charles was going to win by a TKO, but then Marciano came out and with his fighting heart and everything like this, he stopped Ezra Charles. Then it was all downhill from that. Charles still stayed active for another 20-some bouts. You know, he retired in 1959. Now, if, you're saying who's, the greatest and everything like this, Burt Sugar rated him number 7 all-time in the heavyweight division. Ibro rates him number 12 pound-for-pound in the division. You know, most people rate him as the greatest light heavyweight there ever was, because he did beat, Archie Moore 3 times. He beat Joey Maxim 5 times. He beat Jimmy Bivens 4 times. He was just that good. Even Max Kellerman rated him number 10 pound for pound in the world. So he was like I said, he's a very underrated fighter. You know, nobody really brings him up, but he was quite something in his day. And of course, later on in his life, he got Lou Gehrig disease, and he passed away, tragically that way. That's a terrible disease. That was it.
In Cincinnati, Henry, you're talking about his life after boxing. You know, Ezek Charles did a lot in that community of Cincinnati, in the Overton district in Cincinnati. He helped a lot of young kids. He had an after-school program that did very well, and he had a good boxing program that did very well. And,
yeah, he worked
and right
with,
now
youth,
they have
youth
a
welfare
big
system.
Yeah,
even in Chicago, he did that.
Yeah.
So he was, you know, he was quite a, you know, quite a, he was a good guy, let's put it that way. You know, he wasn't a, thing against him was that he wasn't spectacular. You know, he was a workman type fighter. You know, he did his job and he did it. You know, I think that killing somebody in the ring really took that fire away from him, you know, and, you know, he was never really the same type of fighter anymore after, you know, the death of the fighter Sam, and so that kind of took it away. But he was very active with his community, both in Cincinnati and in Chicago. So he was, you know, he was a good guy, and you know, I just wanted to do it on him to bring people up to snuff, you know, as far as he had 121 fights, 77 of them were against people that were rated in the top 10. And 59
wow.
were rated in the top 10 when he fought him. That's over 48% out of all the Hall of Famers, you know, in the history of boxing. There's only four Hall of Famers that have a better average of fighting, you know, contenders. That's Muhammad Ali, Oscar De La Hoya, Emil Griffin, and Sugar Ray Leonard. And Ezra Charles is just a step above Joe Louis, you know. So he fought them all, from all middleweight all the way up to light heavyweight. And you know, you can't say, you know, nothing bad about his record. He's truly a Hall of Famer, you know, International Boxing Hall of Fame. I believe it was 1990. So you know, he was just a tremendous. Fighter, and he was named the Ring Fighter of the Year twice in 1949 and 1950, and you know, that's about it for Ezra Charles.
Well, Bob, any questions on Ezra Charles?
No, I'm good. That was nice. It was pretty comprehensive. No, kind of covered it all for me. I'm good.
Well,
I thought you were
going to
give me one of them,
you know,
big names.
Yeah, well, let's bring Ezra Charles up to date, and you know, like we all the time say, it's tough fighters in different era, but he would be something kind of special in this era too, without a doubt.
Yeah, well, you'd still, you know, like I said, he wasn't much over the light heavyweight limit. You know, his best weight was probably in the low 180s. And, you know, as far as, you know, if you're going to rate the light heavyweights of all time, I mean, you know, you got Archie Moore, but he beat him three times, you know, and, you know, I got Harold Johnson. Harold Johnson did beat him, but, you know, it was a pretty close decision. But, you know, there's not too many light heavyweights that can compare with him. The thing is that he was never a light heavyweight champion. That's because he was never given the shot. You know, any champion that was the champion during his day, you know, said, you know, no way is he going to get a shot at my title. You know, so it kind of put it to Bosch on, you know, a lot of people don't rate him as a light heavyweight. Like Gene Tunney, you know, they rate him as a heavyweight, but almost all his career was in the light heavyweight division. You know, so I would put Ezra Charles right up there with Gene Tunney, Sam Lankford, Archie Moore. I would put him ahead of Archie Moore because he did beat him three times. And, you know, and he's right up there. So, like I said, Bert Sugar and I think it was Ray Arcel both said he was the greatest light heavyweight they've ever seen.
Mm-hmm. You know, him and Walcott, they fought some tremendous fights, right?
Yeah, they fought four times. And, you know, a lot of people say, why did Walcott get another shot? Because, you know, Walcott lost twice to Lewis. Of course, the first fight against Lewis, a lot of people thought he won. Then he fooled around in the second fight, and he got hit with one of Lewis's power punches, and that ended that. So that was two fights he lost. And then... Then he went in an elimination bout against Ezra Charles, and Charles beat him in a decision, and beat him again in a decision. And then the very next bout, you know, Charles gave him another shot. that would be his fifth shot at the heavyweight title, and Walcott came up with that big left hook. I believe it was the seventh round, and we had a new world champion. And Ezra Charles really, you know, really wasn't the same after that. He had some good wins, but you know, once you get knocked out like that, it's hard to rebound.
Yeah, and you know, with today's fight, with them trying to make a heavyweight fight with White over there in England, and also Ortiz, which is, I think, is a dynamite fight. It's a dynamite matchup. And what's coming up here December 2nd with Wilder and Tyson Fury. I think those heavyweight matchups that we have going on today, if they can continue to make those style of matchups, when you hear about an Ezek Charles fighting all of these contenders and, you know, all of these big-name champions, this is what it does for you. It enshrines you in a place where after the love for the game that you have when you gave it your all, you're enshrined in the place where all this greatness is at. And that's what the Boxing Hall of Fame is all about.
Yeah,
you
well,
know?
Charles
and,
fought more fights than any other heavyweight champion at 121. You know, that's more than any other heavyweight champion. And like I said, he fought more world contenders than any other heavyweight champion. But a lot of his fights were in the middleweight and light heavyweight division. But, you know, it's a different era. I mean, they had a fight just to put food on the table, especially in the beginning of the career, because they weren't making that much. Today, you know, they make, you know, hundreds of thousands, even millions of dollars for just one fight, and they have just maybe one or two fights a year. You know, years ago when Charles was in his prime, you know, you had to fight six, seven times a year just to make things match up. I mean, you know, the money just wasn't there. You know, and there was no pay-per-view and stuff like this, like you were talking about the million-dollar gate before, you know, when Ali fought Frazier in 1971, that was only the ninth million-dollar gate in boxing history. From 1921 to 1971, that's 50 years, it was only nine. Now, you know, you have it all the time, especially with pay-per-view and these big stadiums that Joshua fills up, you know, 80,000 people, you know, I mean, it's, you know, I don't even know how many million-dollar gates there are now, but, you know, years ago, the money just wasn't there, you know, like it is today.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know, you have to work at really building the gate, and the gate was so much important because that's where mostly all the revenue came from. You know, TV back in that day wasn't, the platform wasn't built like it's. And pay-per-view didn't exist that well, but radio, boxing did very well on radio with, you know, Joe Louis dominating the airwaves back when radio was king.
I always remember Don Dunphy. You know, I mean, he would do the blow-by-blow, and I mean, it felt like you were right there, you know, when he did it. But you're right. I mean, you know, there was no. Let's say HBO or you know, Showtime or anything like this, ESPN, you know, it was just, you know, maybe local TV, and most of the big bouts weren't even on TV. You know, they wanted to have it, you know, like say blocked out or whatever, and they had it on radio. But times have changed, and, you know, for the better, really. I mean, you know, Ezra Charles had 121 fights, and, you know, he fought far too long. He should have retired after losing to Marciano the second time because he fought another 4 years. And, you know, I think that might have contributed to his downfall too, you know. But, you know, that was what it was years ago.
Yeah, but he's definitely a legend. We have 40 seconds here. We'd like to thank you, Henry, for bringing us Ezek Charles. What a legend, a Hall of Famer. In closing, we'd like you to tune into our website now that's up at boxing review radio show that's up and going. And at blogtalkradio.com/worldboxingreview is always where you can hear this. And the shows are always up online. But with this 10 seconds, we'd like to thank you for tuning in to the World Boxing Review. I'm Aaron Snowell. They call me the Hall of Fame Trainer of Champions. And our radio aficionado, Bob Murray, and our boxing historian, Henry Hascop. Great job, Henry. We'd like to thank you. Tune in next Saturday at 11 to 12, every Saturday.
Yeah,
all
thank
right.
You for listening.
Take care, guys.
Talk to you. Take care. Right. Yeah, you too. Bye.